It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. People think that there are a lot of pigeons today, although the common pigeon, also known as the rock dove, is nowhere near as common as the passenger pigeon was at its peak. People like to complain a lot about pigeons, but these birds have a lot more going on than most of us give them credit for. And that is why we visited the Comparative Cognition Laboratory, run by Ed Wasserman, the Stewart Professor of Experimental Psychology at the University of Iowa. He is world-renowned for his work on animal intelligence, including work that shows that pigeons can recognize individual human faces. And this lab is full of pigeons doing important work. Ed and I sat down at a bank of computers, one of three banks of computers in the room, and on the monitor in front of us, pictures of fish and flowers were flashing by.
That is what the pigeon sees.
All right, and the pigeon is on the other side of this wall?
Pigeon's in another room looking at a different monitor and seeing the same thing that you're seeing.
And it's all by itself in that room?
Yes, it has no, it can't phone a friend and it doesn't have anybody else to help it out.
How do you know that once you put a pigeon in there, it's actually going to pay attention to what's going on?
Because the coin of the realm for a hungry bird is food.
How does it earn food through this?
By making the correct choice. So when it makes the correct choice, it gets food. When it makes the incorrect choice, it has to repeat the trial and do it all over again. So there's a penalty for making a mistake, and it is to have to repeat the trial all over again.
All right. How long will a single pigeon spend in that room looking at this computer screen?
Hour, an hour and a half. Sometimes 2 hours. It depends on the number of trials we're giving them. Some tasks we want a great many trials in a day, and the pigeons are happy to comply. In other cases, we're restricted to the number of possible combinations that we give. You have to realize that every one of these experiments is a piece of a long narrative, and different designs that we use and different kinds of stimuli that we employ. In all of our experiments, we do nothing other than give the bird food when it's right and don't give it food when it's wrong. That's how we do all of our experiments. There are many other ways that you can do these experiments, and over the years, we've used water as a reward. We've used heat as a reward for little chicks. We've done many different things, but we're sticking with our standby here. And the pigeon's box is equipped with a touchscreen so that every one of its pecks is not only recorded that it happened, but where it happened.
An hour and a half to 2 hours seems like an incredible amount of time for a pigeon to maintain their attention span. I mean, we don't give kids standardized tests until they're in third grade. That's really remarkable.
That's why pigeons could be a very good model for doing experiments in which you have to repeat trials endlessly. If you're trying to determine the limits of perception, for example, you'll probably need a great many trials to see how fine a gradation in the stimulus the birds can actually detect. With people, they don't have that much patience, and it's harder to maintain their motivation. But pigeons are diligent beasts, happy to comply with the demands of the experiments.
How do you train the pigeons to participate? I mean, how old are they? Where are they raised?
Oh, we get pigeons from local breeders. People are pigeon fanciers, many of them. They race pigeons as well. So they have extra birds. They're not all great homers. And we get some of the birds that they prefer not to continue to breed. They engage in the selective breeding. We'll tend to get the culls. They're called them culls. They're perfectly wonderful birds, but they're not the ones that can fly 300 miles and find their way back with reliability.
So let's talk about this experiment that we were watching just a few minutes ago. We would see a picture, and then four choices pop up, and the pigeon has to choose something. It's supposed to choose something that matches the first picture
that came up. The identical match to the stimulus that they had just seen.
How many pigeons will go through this exercise today?
We just finished the squad of four. And this idea for this experiment, you should appreciate, I will emphasize, does not come from our assiduous study of pigeons in the wild. And it has little, in fact, nothing to do with, you might argue, the natural history of pigeons or any other animals. It actually comes from experiments with people, experiments that have been done long ago and that are being done right now. And questions about the nature of human memory, how specific it is, what's retained over long periods of time, are every bit as interesting to us who study animal behavior as those who study human behavior, because the simple fact is that many of us believe that there are laws of behavior. They're not laws of pigeon behavior, they're not laws of human behavior, they're laws of behavior generally. And this kind of generalist position could easily be shown to be false, and there may be constraints and limitations on the nature of memory, but we're interested in what might be general across people and pigeons.
We're in this room that has, what, is it four banks of computers like this one, or
three
banks of computers like this one?
Well, we have a dozen birds that run at a time. And so the other project that we're running is one that's part of a recent proposal that we've had funded here on campus that's looking at the nature of categorization and its participation in word learning. And so this is a project that we're actually doing in parallel with what's going to include humans, adults, youngsters, and perhaps, we hope, youngsters with reading or other language disabilities.
So you're teaching your pigeons to read?
That's too facile a claim. We wouldn't make it. But what we would say is that categorization is essential to naming things. So if you have a name like chair, it's going to denote a whole host of things that have some commonalities to one another, not unlike the basic theme that this matching to sample experiment had. But in that particular case, we have a special trick. And the special trick is that when we're training the 16 different kinds of stimuli that we're using in the experiment, each one is associated with the moral equivalent of a word. And this is going to be hard to communicate with sounds like speech. It's a visual word, a token.
Like a lexigram? Is that what we're talking about?
We're talking exactly a lexigram. We will have then 16 lexigrams associated with 16 different objects. And the pigeon's task is to learn those associations. And at issue in that project is what the nature of that learning is. Is it all just establishing connections between a specific lexigram and a specific object? Or is it possible that in the course of that learning, individuals are actually also throwing out, culling, removing erroneous connections? So when you're training concurrently 16 objects and 16 lexigrams, you have to learn what not to do as well as what to do, potentially. And so that there's a certain interest in yin and yang of doing the correct thing and also learning what not to do. You know, we often say that learning is a trial and error process, but what do we do with the mistakes? Perhaps they're actually an important part of the learning. And so that's one of the things we're going to look at. It might be the case, for instance, that language-disabled individuals are having specific trouble with the culling or elimination process and not as much trouble as we might think in establishing the correct associations. But the problem comes when you're always given an alternative at the same time as you're giving the correct one. So there's both a wrong one and a right one. And which one do you choose? If you're not eliminating the wrong ones, it may slow you down. It may be something of an impediment to having only one process, a strengthening process, without a concurrent weakening process. And so that's the sort of thing that we're looking at.
Now, most of the lexigram studies with animals that I'm familiar with have been with great apes. And, of course, a major focus of those studies has been to communicate with the apes, with chimpanzees and bonobos. Do you foresee an opportunity to communicate with your pigeons?
I wouldn't say no. But I think we're starting at the ground floor, and we'll see whether we could take the escalator up to higher places.
It seems to me that in the popular press, when we read about bird intelligence, a lot of the studies that make news are about crows and their tool use and their problem solving, etc. Now, when we read about pigeons in the news, usually it's about there are too many of them and they're causing problems in different places. What made you think of using pigeons in this way?
Well, pigeons have been a mainstay of behavioral laboratories since Skinner. He began this work in an interesting way. He had, in fact, trained pigeons to be the guidance system of missiles at the end of World War II. The pigeons in this project passed every test for effectively and accurately guiding missiles to their target. But the pigeons were never deployed in warfare. The military brass, although they had instigated the project and supported it, simply couldn't bring themselves to the point where
they would use pigeons.
Yeah, and you know, just imagine that a bomb would go astray. We have had enough trouble with our own technology now of what's called collateral damage. And just imagine that those had involved some other organism like a pigeon or even a chimpanzee. The public wouldn't stand for it. And I think there are better uses of our animal friends than warfare.
Can we see your pigeons?
Of course.
Right.
So these are the troops.
Hello.
Notice how they stopped when you approached.
Right. They didn't want to talk to us.
How many pigeons are in here?
Well, we have 32. What have we got here? We have 16 in two banks. We have 32 birds in here.
And
there are males and females, but you can't tell them from simply looking at them. They don't have external genitalia.
So do you know which is which?
No. Except when they lay eggs. This is usually a subtle clue.
And what do the pigeons do with their downtime?
They watch us. They watch the world go by.
Now, these are pretty small cages, and these are obviously very intelligent creatures. What do you do to keep them stimulated here during all these hours when they're not doing an experiment?
People come and go during the day, and the caretakers change their food and water. They have grit that they eat. But one of the reasons why they are so anxious to participate in our experiments is that it's sort of like sitting in a dorm room and wanting to get out and, you know, go to a show and have some activity. So it is the opportunity for pigeons to get out and do things. And they do seem to enjoy it. They work hard.
Do you get to know them? And they all have a number. They don't have names here. But do you get to know them a little bit?
Oh, well, when you handle individual birds, their habits are well known. Some are a little harder to get out of the bucket. Some will, it takes a glee in nipping at you. Yes, they do seem to have their own ways. When you work with them on a daily basis, you learn.
Are some affectionate?
We try not to turn them into pets. Some students find them, a particular one's a little more docile. But I found that doesn't engender particularly good behavior in the box. Somehow they're, well, overly tamed that way.
Now, they can live a long time. They can participate in these experiments for a long time. Is there something about them as they age sometimes that means that they have to be retired?
Oh, they sometimes have to be euthanized. We've had some with cancer. We've had some get glaucoma, cataracts. So, yeah, we've had issues. But we keep very close tabs on their health. We have a very fine veterinary staff. Our own students are watching over them constantly. Because if they're not in good health, if they're not doing well physically, they're not going to do well in any experiments.
They're certainly interested, many of them, in what we're doing right now.
Oh, yeah. You can see they're always active, alert. I mean, just look at them. They're not asleep. There isn't a single one that's asleep. And I could make this room the craziest place you've ever seen by getting the food bucket and start, because we do feed them. They do get fed after the experiment. If you come in with that now and start shaking the food around, feathers fly, dust is everywhere. You'll come out with a coating on you, especially with dark clothing. Now, you don't want to be here for that. And it gets really loud because they'll go up against the front of the cage and flap their wings, because there's plenty of room in those cages for them to fully flap their wings.
All right.
Ah, see? There you go. There we go. You can see just...
This one's so pretty. Such a light gray.
Oh, yes. Some of them are brown. Do we have any? Some of them are white. We used to have some white ones that were... And I don't.
This one has white markings there.
So there are two basic styles you get. You know, it's like a Ford and Chevy. Some of them have what are called bars, and some of them have checkers. So this is your classic bar pigeon. It's got those bars, and its feathers are smooth. But that one, you see the wing pad, it's got that modeling. So those are checkers. And there are brown checkers and red bars.
All right, well, we're almost done.
That's it.
So, you know, you've gotten a lot of attention for experiments in the past, for example, showing us all that pigeons can recognize the faces of human beings,
right,
and recognize different individuals. But beyond the specific results of your different experiments, for people listening right now, what do you want them to know about pigeons?
I want them to know that pigeons are noble, intelligent animals that adapt to their worlds in much the same way that we do. We often sell animals short because we don't fully understand the contingencies of survival that are operating. That's one of the things that I think is really important about studying animal behavior. If you ask, well, how is it have you been able to train these pigeons to do all these wild and crazy things? And the answer is the same way that you and I learn how to do all the things we do. We learn through a mechanical process of trial and error, often quite dumb luck. So I think that when we study animals, we're in the same position. We often don't think of them as particularly intelligent because we're not adapting to their world. But if you fully understood the intricacies and challenges, you would be impressed. And I am.
Ed, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Ed Wasserman, experimental psychologist at the University of Iowa. We visited him at the Comparative Cognition Laboratory. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.